step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
From Geppetto Studios in New Freedom, Pennsylvania, welcome to the Cosmic Geppetto Podcast, your home for inclusive, positive geek culture, where we talk about movies, comics, music, books, and whatever else we feel like. Please welcome your host.
You're going to get laid. You're going to outsmart everyone.
Brad Mendenhall.
Hey kids, it is episode 265 of the Cosmic Geppetto Podcast. Brian Lockhart makes his debut to talk about Top Gun Maverick. We also chat about other military films and which ones have inspired interest in joining the military. Anywho, Katie has a question.
If you could choose anyone, real or fictional, to be your roommate for the next 12 months, who would you choose?
Oh, man. That's tough. I'm in my late 40s. I don't want a roommate. I don't think I'm a good roommate. I don't think I would make a good roommate. I'm not sure if I was ever a good roommate. I don't know.
Gosh.
I still think too much along the lines of Marvel. Because I think Tony Stark. Tony Stark would be... Tony Stark would be a good roommate because it's a mansion, so you don't see him very often. He throws amazing parties and has all the coolest technology. And I am a little bit of a sucker for the new cool thing. I just installed a Ring doorbell, one that has like a video and it attaches. You can attach it to your phone and app on your phone. And so you see people, it has motion detection, so people walk in front of your house to see if somebody delivers a package or, you know, whatever. And I just installed that. We have Alexas all over the house. I guess that would be it. I guess Tony Stark, because I think it would have all the neat gadgets, and I'm a bit of a sucker for gadgets. And also, when it comes to houses, I'm a little utilitarian with homes. There's a really nice house that we just looked at in not too far from us. Not that we're house hunting, but just because it was a house that was near. And I was always curious about it, and it had an open house. And from the outside, it was just a sort of a plain gray house and very functional on the outside. And when you went in, it was really like a neat house, and it had well-appointed and, had upgraded bathrooms and kitchens. And so I like that. I live outside of Baltimore, or like 45 minutes north of Baltimore, and I remember driving down one road on the outskirts of Baltimore where there are a handful of mansions, and I actually saw the mansion that at the time was owned by Cal Ripken. Cal Ripken, a very famous Baltimore institution. He was an amazing shortstop and then later third baseman. Ripken, it had a very... His home looked like a complex. And apparently because he was an avid basketball player, as well as, you know, a professional baseball player. And he had this apparently amazing basketball court. And he would invite other athletes from other Baltimore sports and other people to come and play basketball. And apparently has an amazing pool and all this great, just very extravagant. Because he's a millionaire, but everything had a purpose, and I always liked that. And sort of the Tony Stark that we saw in the movies was like that, where his homes weren't necessarily, he didn't have these great Gothic mansions. He had, you know, sort of state of the art, and that amazing shop that he had, especially in the first two movies. And I always liked that. Obviously, I'm not an inventor. I wouldn't be doing anything like that. But I would love to have something that's big and space. And it would obviously have an amazing podcasting room and an amazing band area and stuff like that. And I always liked that. Yeah, Tony Stark.
I'm very excited. This is a guest and a subject I've been looking forward to having on literally for years, from the excellent Marine Corps Movie Minute podcast, the sexiest podcaster alive. Sorry, Dave Pallas. We have Brian Lockhart. Brian, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Brad. And that was in my rider, so I appreciate you honoring that. So thank you so much for having me.
Got to respect the riders. There's also no green M&Ms for you in the waiting area. So we took care of you.
You honored me in the best way possible. So I thank you.
Years ago, we interact on Facebook. We are running the same Facebook circles, and there's a lot of happy birthdays. And you'll like a comment I make every now and then. I'll like a comment you make every now and then. But it's been a while, and the last time we were on a podcast together, I believe it was your excellent podcast where we talked about the Clint Eastwood movie Heartbreak Ridge. We talked about how I wanted you to come on Cosmic Geppetto when Top Gun Maverick came out, and we didn't know how long it was going to take.
This is true. In fact, back then we did have that conversation where it was like it had already been delayed, and then you were like, it's got to come out eventually. So whenever it comes out, we'll have you on. And here you are. You honored it. Oh, here I am.
Man of my word. I had a lot of suspicions about this movie. Not only would it be good, but if it was going to make money. There was a lot of things to indicate that this wasn't going to be, regardless of whether it was going to be a critical or artistic success, whether it was going to make money, because Tom Cruise is not guaranteed box office anymore. I don't think he flops a lot, but his movies often don't make money until you go to foreign markets or post theatrical release. Like, I think he still rents well. I think his stuff does well in streaming and like sort of the aftermarket stuff. There was a period of time where Tom Cruise was in a movie, it was going to make the most money and it was going to be a big success just because Tom Cruise was in it. And aside from the Mission Impossible stuff, he's not that sort of guaranteed box office anymore.
Yeah, that's totally true. Because, I mean, what was it? They tried to do that big mummy, you know, universal monster tentpole with him, and it just tanked. And he was like, you know, heading that. And I think a lot of his movies are solid, like a Jack Reacher or a Oblivion. But yeah, I don't think they make a lot of money. They don't, like you said, they don't flop except for Mummy. But other than that, his name doesn't hold the same cachet as it used to. He's a known quantity, but it's not necessarily a box office draw the way it was in the 80s and even 90s.
There's also a thing where there's an expiration date on sequels. When it gets to be 10 years between movies, all of a sudden there's really diminished returns. And the director of this film, Joseph Kosinski, directed Tron Legacy, and everyone was sort of expecting that to be a big hit, and it wasn't. The later Terminator movies, which had so much distance between the first two, there was a sequel to Chinatown, The Two Jakes, that tanked. Like, when you have this huge period of time, I don't know if it's taste in movies change or they sort of reek of desperation sometimes, but those long gestating sequels, it feels like, oh, crap, the stars, director, whoever it is who want the movie made, they ran out of other options. And it's sort of, you know, Top Gun, not necessarily a movie made for a sequel. I mean, it felt like a very complete film. So coming back 30 years afterwards to a star that isn't the same sort of star he was. And also, Tom Cruise doesn't make movies like Top Gun anymore, because Top Gun was kind of an action movie, but not really. It's not an action movie that you think of, not like a Mission Impossible or a Jack Reacher, dust them up. It was more of like, for lack of a better term, a military romantic dramedy.
That's a good way of putting it.
Which Tom Cruise doesn't really do anymore. He doesn't play romantic leading men like he used to. And there's been a lot of talk about that. Like, he's no longer seen as the viable guy that gets the girl like he did in Cocktail or Days of Thunder. Or like that used to be his thing. The first movie directed by Tony Scott, who never had the artistic cachet of his brother Ridley. But Tony Scott was a known sort of iconic presence as a director. All these things, not the same director, big distance, Tom Cruise, not like a lot of reasons to think this movie wasn't going to catch on. And it did.
It kind of surprised me that it did. I thought it would be enjoyable. I also thought maybe it could be terrible. I mean, it really could have been. And I was really surprised that it even came out once Tony Scott died, because I believe when he was in development, I think he wanted him to do it. And when he passed away, I'm like, well, maybe it's just in development hell and it's never going to get made. But here it is.
At what point did you get the sense, oh, this could actually be something special and something successful and something good?
Well, for me, it was the first trailer. I am a firm believer in, like we said, there's a shelf life of sequels. Like a Dumb and Dumber was a really bad idea to do, you know, so many years later. But say Star Wars, that has legacy characters and new characters, like the concept is there and it's good if it's done right. Ghostbusters, I think, did a decent job of bridging that gap, at least, you know, when they did a sequel and not a reboot. But you just never know with like something like a Top Gun, because it may be just a little too far away. It's been like, what, 30 years? Not like, say, 20. Tom Cruise technically should probably not even be in the military anymore with his age. That being said, I saw that first trailer and I'm like, I think this movie might actually be good. I got really excited from then on. You know, anytime a trailer came out, I don't really follow a lot of the spoilers or anything like that, but I don't avoid trailers. I wanted that. And every time I saw it, I got excited.
The thing that really impressed me was there was an extended 4-minute trailer before I saw Doctor Strange, the second Doctor Strange film. And I was like, why are they dedicating so much time? This isn't going to be a big hit. It looked so much like, and this is going to sound pejorative, it's not meant that way, but it looked like a dad movie, like the Taken films, or basically anything Liam Neeson's done in the last 10 years, which is great. Those are fun sort of meat and potatoes movies. Dads need movies too. And, you know, I'm a dad getting pretty close to 50, so I'm getting pretty comfortably in that range. Then there was just the action. It didn't feel green screened. And I love my Marvel films, but everything is against a green background and then they just fill it in. And there's just something very real that you can't take away. And Tom Cruise does this real well. He's been doing it with his Mission Impossible films for a while, where there's just something very real and very in danger when you see those flying sequences. It's like, okay, I'm convinced. And now it looks like this is a movie, I think, as we're speaking, it's made over worldwide $900 million. It looks like it could be Tom Cruise's first movie to make over $1 billion. That's really impressive. Credit given, I think he made a lot of people wrong about this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even my co-host of the Marine Corps Movie Minute, Perry, I was talking to him the other day. He finally went out and saw it, and he said the idea of a Top Gun sequel is dumb, flat out. And he said, boy, was I wrong. He goes, it was amazing. I think a lot of people had that thought of like, you know, why are they doing this? Tom Cruise is, you know, he's had his issues in the past of people kind of thinking he's a little crazy. At the same time, it's like, you know, here's a movie that's 30 years, you know, a sequel to a 30-year-old movie. Though I think the word of mouth really picked up and people were like, oh, I need to see this. Because it's, you know, like I said, credit to where credit's due. They took I mean, yes, it's a known property, but it's not something that's like been in the zeitgeist like Star Wars or Marvel for these last few years. It's an old property that they revived and are close to making $1 billion now in this kind of environment. In a world where a lot of movies don't even make it to the theater anymore. And this one did.
Eddie Murphy, who was a pretty huge star at his peak the same time Tom Cruise was. Coming to America 2 went right to Amazon. Think they're working on another Beverly Hills Cop that's going to go right to Netflix. Taking those properties and skipping theaters and just like, no, put it on Amazon where where the fandom, 40-something, 50-something-year-olds who are excited about this movie, they're not going to go to a theater to see it. They're going to sit and be comfortable and watch it on their big screen TVs, and nothing wrong with it. That's a good... Obviously, the money's there, however you do it. If they would have said, this is going to be a direct to whatever streaming service, I wouldn't have been surprised.
I'm actually glad they didn't do that, like, and release it, say, on, like, an HBO Max or any of them now. Like they'll release it in the theater and then put it out on streaming at the same time. And I'm glad they didn't do that. A lot of the reason, because I think, I mean, I could be mistaken, but I thought they filmed a lot of this with IMAX cameras. And I actually kind of kicked myself for not going to see it in IMAX, because I think it would be amazing, you know, on that big screen like that. This movie is meant for the big screen. There is a lot of non-action parts where it's like, you know, you don't need to see that type of stuff on like a giant IMAX theater with surround sound. But when they have the plane sequences, you kind of like seeing that in a true theater environment and not just a home theater.
That's a neat callback to the original film, where I remember my parents getting a pretty good sound system that connected with the TV. And that's when that was like a first thing, where you weren't just living with the speakers that came with your television. You could actually hook it into your speakers with your radio at home. That was one of the first movies they rented on VHS, because I'm a very old man. You wanted to see it in theaters, or you wanted to listen to it on your really good sound system at home. And that was one of the movies that would really appreciate all the more, not just seeing it on Amazon with not even your TV. You don't want to watch it on your iPad or your iPhone when you're about ready to go to sleep.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I had a similar experience as a child. My neighbor was the first in the neighborhood to have, he was like a tech guy, and he liked to have his big screen TVs, as big as you could get back then, and his surround sound. And he had all the neighbors over and rented Top Gun. And we all watched Top Gun as like a neighborhood get together. And that was my first experience with it. And just the sound was amazing. It was nothing like anything I had heard at home before.
One of the things, and you sort of alluded to this, where Tom Cruise is, who's getting real close to 60 in real life. And I'm not a military guy. I'm the generation after all the military guys in my family, because my father and my uncles were all Vietnam era, and they all served during that time. And I'm the generation where my dad did well, was in the military at a tough time. He wasn't stationed in Vietnam. He was stationed actually in Korea during the Vietnam conflict. He was stationed in the neutral zone in Korea. He was very lucky, and he's the first one to say it. So a lot of the people who were drafted, and my father being an example of this, is like, it was such a tough time to be in the military. Often it's like, I don't want you to be in the military. There's two ways. I have a friend whose father was in Vietnam, and he wanted to go. Like, his father distilled a passion for the military, and he ended up going in for 20, and still is. He's been in the military for 20 years. And that just wasn't what my dad's experience was, but taught me a lot of respect for the military. You obviously would have a like better idea of a 60-something Tom Cruise in real life. If he was in the military, he'd be as like, administrative is the wrong way, but from a leadership perspective, basically he'd be a desk guy, right? If he was still, he wouldn't be like flying against everybody.
I mean, there's a couple things about that kind of, like you said, as somebody who's been in the military and kind of knows how it goes, there is an age limit. Like you, I mean, at some point, I mean, that's a whole thing of like Heartbreak Ridge that I did with Clint Eastwood. He was approaching the mandatory retirement age, so it didn't matter. He had to get out. And Tom Cruise is definitely past that point. I could be wrong, but I mean, are there admirals or generals that maybe because of their position are older? Yeah, maybe. But as far as, you know, just a pilot like he is, yeah, he would not be doing that, first off. Secondly, there's no way he'd still be a captain 30 years later. They never cover it in the film, but my understanding or my belief is that he had been promoted beyond captain several times and kept getting in trouble and kept getting losing rank. That's what I'm going with. Because there's just no way somebody would stay stale for 30 years. There's a cutoff in the service that if you don't get promoted by a certain point, you get out before your 20 years. Like 20 years is like the typical retirement. Some people can stay to 30. But if you're not getting promoted in a certain amount of time, then you're administratively discharged. The way the military looks at it is you're stagnant at this point. Why aren't you progressing? He easily should have been an admiral just right along with Iceman, but he wasn't. He was just an 03, I think he was. So yeah, he's pretty low level still. It strains credibility a little bit, but it doesn't matter. We still want Captain Pete Mitchell. We don't want Admiral Mitchell.
You're not interested in seeing a desk-bound Tom Cruise as Maverick cheering on his subordinate. Good on Tom Cruise. He looks great. So great that it actually is Val Kilmer, who has had pretty well-documented health issues. Even before he had the health issues, Val Kilmer did not look the same age as Tom Cruise. He was aging pretty rough to begin with. Kelly McGillis. They did not bring Charlie Blackwood back because Kelly McGillis looks like a handsome woman in her 60s. She doesn't look like a movie star, so it wouldn't work. Tom Cruise looking like, you know, there's a portrait of him somewhere aging, and then Kelly McGillis looking like someone her own age. So they have to cast around it, and they did a very good job casting a romantic interest with Jennifer Connelly, who, while she is younger than Tom Cruise, she's not, you know, she's 51. She's not ridiculously younger. Thank God they didn't do like, and there's Jennifer Lawrence in her early 30s.
Right.
She's age appropriate, but she looks great. Also, it's not the same sort of, the movie didn't lean as hard into the romantic entanglements as they did in the first film.
I think that's a good thing. I mean, I when I rewatched the first movie before going to see the second one, I tried to get my kids to see it, and they weren't really interested. And then they went and saw the second one and really liked it. And I told them, I'm like, I actually don't blame you for not seeing the first one, because there is a lot of slow bits to it. Like, I don't think they would have cared at all for any of the relationship with Charlie. That's a big part of the first movie. It's still a part of this movie, the love story, or, you know, Maverick's personal life, but it's not the only focus. There is a lot about the mission and the training and the flying.
It's a part where movies have changed. And my understanding and my memory on this isn't perfect, but my understanding is in the first Top Gun, the relationship between Mav and Charlie was a little bit tacked on. Originally, it was just a lot of glances at each other and sort of an implication. And then it was then they realized they had Tom Cruise. And Top Gun Tom Cruise in the mid-80s, he was the hottest star on the planet. Top Gun could have just been Tom Cruise with paper airplanes throwing it at people, and it would have made a lot of money. He was at that ridiculously hot A-list star where whatever he did worked. And when you have 20-something at his peak, Tom Cruise, there was also a time where you just had sex scenes in movies.
Just because. Yeah.
Which doesn't exist anymore. When I watched Eternals, there was so much made of the fact that Eternals was the first Marvel film with a sex scene. And that was not a big 3-minute scene with a big song behind it. In Top Gun, that was a sex scene with a plot. It was so choreographed.
Right.
And that doesn't exist PG-13 movies that are sort of action films. The perfunctory, well, we have to have Tom Cruise, Kevin Costner, Mel Gibson, whoever. They have to stoop somebody before the film's over. Come on.
You got to get the girl. Yeah.
You got to get the girl. This is such a different movie. And it's another reason why this shouldn't have worked.
Yeah, I mean, it did, though. I mean, that's all. I mean, I'm glad it did. It was enjoyable.
It was directed by Joseph Kosinski. We talked about that before. Right as that came out, he has another movie that just was released on Netflix, Spiderhead, with Chris Hemsworth. And it's sort of funny because Top Gun Maverick has made so much money and good buzz and stuff. Spiderhead has not gotten good reviews, with arguably a star who is a little bit more closer to his peak. Chris Hemsworth, big deal. Thor, Love and Thunder, is going to make pretty close to $1 billion. You know, he's a well-liked character, actor and everything. I have a theory why one worked and one has not. I mean, aside from a known IP. I mean, has Spiderhead even been on your radar? Because it's not, doesn't have a lot of buzz and it's not getting good reviews. Are you even dialed into this movie?
Slightly, because it's based on, you know, I guess some of it is true, or it's based on a true story for a Syracuse University professor. And my uncle played for Syracuse University. So I was kind of like, oh, this is about, you know, I might want to watch this. And then I watched the trailer the other night and I'm like, I don't know if I want to watch this. It didn't really look that good to me.
I hate dismissing directors because, hey, Top Gun Maverick is a big undertaking. It's a big budget. Tom Cruise is not easy to, it's not fair to say he's not easy to work with. I'm not saying that he's not easy, like he's difficult or he's bad or he's a jerk or anything. But Tom Cruise goes into his movies not just as an actor, but also as a producer, and he's demanding, as he should be. As we're talking, we're not that far removed from he got caught like screaming at the crew of the latest Mission Impossible movie, because as a producer, people weren't following COVID restrictions and everything that was set up, and he was basically took everyone to task. It's tough to direct someone who's also your boss. I think a big thing is this movie, Top Gun Maverick, was co-written and had a producer of Christopher McQuarrie, has done work on and directed and rewrites on the recent Mission Impossible films. He did work on the first Jack Reacher, which was a really good movie. It seems like when you bring McQuarrie in, he knows how to help get the best out of Tom Cruise. Does that hold water with you? Is like the right people came in to work with him that elevated a director who, without Tom Cruise and without the support system, doesn't quite hit the same home runs?
Yeah, it makes sense to me because, again, Tom Cruise does have creative say on his movies. If he's producing it, like you said, he's the boss. And you know he has a high standard of how he wants movies. He has vision. He's got certain ways he wants to do things. And you just know that he is going to get his way a lot of times. Yeah, you bring a director in, you give him credit and all that, but you know, Tom Cruise ultimately is going to win any, like, say, creative control, creative decisions. So I definitely think that Tom really has a lot to do with how, not just in acting, but as how this movie shaped up.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
First movie came out, there was a huge uptick in people signing up for the Navy.
Oh, yeah.
To the point where it became a source of criticism about it, where this was before Born on the 4th of July. This is before Platoon. And this is almost, in a lot of ways, one of the last really big military films that portrayed the military and military life so positively.
I call them rah-rah films.
Yeah, and that's a fantastic way to say it. Are we past the point where you can have a rah-rah film have such an influence on people, you know, going out and saying, it's like, oh, you know, I never even thought about it. And high school kids going out and people who are looking for that next path is like, oh, I want to join them. Sign me up. Do you think this has the possibility of doing something like that? Or is it too much of a dad movie? Because no matter how much I like this movie, I ain't going in the military and they don't want me.
I don't know. I mean, let's put it like this. This movie in particular, it's not going to have the same impact the original Top Gun did. Just period. Because that was massive. I read somewhere that was like a 500% increase in applications to the Navy in like the first year alone. And something I've known or heard for years now is that for about 10 years, so well into the 90s, Top Gun still influenced and helped like naval recruitment. It just had that much of an impact. I don't think any particular property nowadays, we're so divided in what we watch as a culture. You know, like it used to be everybody watched like Dallas or everybody watched Seinfeld or something like that. But it's not the same way anymore, especially with all the streaming services or people not going to the movies and people going to the movies. That's why when a movie like Top Gun or the Marvel movies can break through and you're like, wow, this like everybody went and saw this one. It's kind of rare. I mean, so it's a possibility that a movie could do that again in the future. I really don't think this movie is the movie to do it. There might be a few people out there that look at this and go, yeah, but not to the level that Top Gun did. Top Gun was, I think, unique. And you got to also look at it at the time. Like, everything was like patriotism or pro-America then.
That was right in the middle of the Reagan years.
Yeah. I mean, it was like G.I. Joe was everywhere. I mean, Hulk Hogan was waving his, you know, red, white, and blue, say your prayers and, you know, all that good stuff. That climate is not the current climate. There will be people that are influenced by this movie. I guarantee it. But to the level, no. Will there be a movie that might influence again someday? Yeah, maybe. You'll be surprised at the movies that actually influence people to join the military. Maybe not like their decision, necessarily the full-on decision to go, but maybe what branch they're going to go to, or sometimes just to join the service at all. They just, and it's a wide gambit of movies that some of them I didn't even think of that influence people, and they do. But no, I don't think this movie is going to have quite the cultural impact that first one did as far as recruitment.
It's been so long and so rare that you see military action movies. They're still military movies, but growing up, I remember Born on the 4th of July, Platoon, Casualties of War with Michael J. Fox, Saving Private Ryan. Great film, was an amazing opening scene, and there was action in it, but that wasn't an action movie. It was a drama where the gunfire and the whatever action was there to propel or punctuate the drama. That's probably where the difference is. An action movie like Top Gun is more likely to compel that sort of, oh, that's what I want to do, as opposed to something that gets a little into the challenges of the military, of war. And I'm trying to think of, like, what are, and, you know, it's something that as you're working with your minute-by-minute stuff, you've examined some of the more action stuff, but, you know, you just examine military movies. Two questions. First, what are some of the movies that you've watched that might surprise people? It's like, yeah, this is one that has had influence or sort of pulled people into the military by giving them that perspective.
Knowing that we were going to talk about some of this, I actually went to several of the veterans groups that I'm a part of, and I just pulled them. I said, hey, what are some movies that you guys are maybe have influenced you? And of course, I got several responses of people being like, well, no movie influenced me. It was just a family tradition. My family served and I served. Another big one was 9/11. Or the news. They said the news. But when it came to movies, there was a few that surprised me. And like one of them, and I got to say, this had a slight influence on me as well, is the movie Stripes. It's a wacky comedy that nobody believes is actually how the Army operates. And yet a lot of people did respond to Stripes as one of the movies. Private Benjamin with Goldie Hawn. Now, I had saw that on a list of like top 15 military movies that people wanted to join after watching, and it was on like the wearemighty.com or whatever. And I'm like, it's your usual stuff, Save Private Ryan, you know, Top Gun, all that stuff. And they said Private Benjamin. I'm like, who in their right mind watches Private Benjamin and wants to go into service? And so I didn't really believe it. And then I had some people respond and say, yeah, Private Benjamin. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, of all the movies, it was Private Benjamin.
That's insane.
Yeah.
And Private Benjamin is a weird film where it was a really successful film. It was sort of a big starring role for Goldie Hawn, who up at that point was just like the ditzy blonde from a game show.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like a military movie. It was sort of like a rom-com where she just so happened to be in the military.
Right.
Right. It also was a hideously bad TV show without Goldie Hawn. It's like, why?
I used to watch that.
Oh, we all did. There was only like three TV stations. You watched what was on.
I was a dumb kid. It's funny because like there's even some movies like Down Periscope and McHale's Navy that people reference as being their go-to. And I actually have a personal friend I served with, and she told me Major Payne with Damon Wayans was one of the reasons she joined. And that's barely a military movie because it's a guy, he's not in the military anymore. He's at a prep school and he's in charge of the ROTC department. And that's it. But because he was such a charismatic character, it drew people to the Marines. It's kind of, I'll put another one that's probably a little unique. My co-host Jack Perry from the Marine Corps Movie Minute, he always stated that the movie Aliens was his influence. Mine was personally Heartbreak Ridge, and his was Aliens because of the Space Marines. He really took to those characters. And he's not the only one. I had quite a few people respond that too when I did my little unscientific poll. You don't think about it because they're not typical Marines, but they were meant to be Space Marines, and it draws people to that.
I totally see that because they were the toughest guys in the room and honorable, sacrificing for each other, and even the most Weasley and Bill Paxton's character, who was the puss of the group, he was a badass.
Yeah. Yeah, as much as he talked smack and always complained, he went out tough. You know, he went out fighting anyways. And yeah, he was great.
I could see Stripes being to joining the military what Animal House is going to college.
Yeah.
It's a comedic, ridiculous version, but it makes you look like you're going to have a lot of fun. You're going to get laid. You're going to outsmart everyone. You get to be a little bit of a rule breaker and still have success. It makes the military look like a fraternity.
Yeah.
God, one I remember, I'll see if you remember this movie. I think it was called In the Army with Pauly Shore when he still made movies that got released in theaters.
And that was actually on the list. Somebody mentioned that one in particular too. And I'm like, really?
I can sort of see it. I saw it in college because there was only one movie theater in the small town where I went to college. And it was like, well, we're all broke. It's a $2 movie theater, and it's the only thing playing. I didn't realize at that point, the girls in our group still sort of like Pauly Shore, which surprised the hell out of me. But I could sort of see it where it took Pauly Shore, who his whole persona was being sort of the skinny, scrawny, Weasley guy who got bullied. And credit given, he got in decent shape for Pauly Shore for the movie. So all of a sudden at the end, he was better looking, he was in better shape, and he became sort of competent. It's like, I can see that. It's like any kid watching is like, oh, well, I mean, if the military can make Pauly Shore, maybe not a badass, but not the guy who gets sand kicked in his face. Maybe it's for me.
It is true to life. I mean, I mean, there's been plenty of people that, and like even in just in my own experience, like there was a really, really heavy set guy who ended up being our number one graduate in boot camp. You know, he was on limited rations. He couldn't eat because he was heavy set. He was within the weight limit, but he was at the top of it, and they limited his food. He had extra PT, and that I remember seeing his family seeing him, and they were amazed at the transformation at the end. That does happen. Even myself, I was just kind of a skinny guy, and it was a good year or two after I was in. I filled out, and I saw an old teacher of mine, and she literally started hitting me, and she's like, "What did they do to you?" So it's like, I said, well, I grew up. Because she didn't expect to see me so like a man, you know, instead of this skinny little runt when I left.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hollywood loves following trends. And for the last 5-10 years, it's been superhero films. It's been a while, as we said, it's been a while since you would have military action films, more military dramas. Is Hollywood going to look at this and are they going to say, let's try to pluck, find the next directors and writers who can sort of take the practical effects, the visceral quality of this, and let's start making action military films again? Like, I remember Navy SEALs with Charlie Sheen, Heartbreak Bridge, which sort of straddled the line between action and drama, but close enough, I would give it to it. Do you think that's a possibility we're going to see the next Top Gun? Or do you think Hollywood's just going to say, this is an old IP and Tom Cruise making the right film and it's going to be too hard to recapture that?
I mean, I think somebody's going to try. Like, I don't really expect to get another Iron Eagle out of this as much as I would like it. I really think they're going to look at it more of as a one-off. I just don't think we're in that climate now of kind of glorifying war or the military. I think we've just been too exposed to it, I think, with 24/7 news, with the internet, with all these videos, ongoing wars. There's been more ongoing wars, you know, since I've been alive than there haven't been. It's too real, I think, for people. So I just don't see it. Yeah, maybe one or two may show up here or there. I mean, they're not like extinct exactly. Like somebody like Peter Berg, he's always pro-military when he does his movies. He did the 13 Hours, which is an amazing movie. It's about a political event, but it is straight action, and it's really well.
He also did Lone Survivor, didn't he?
He did Lone Survivor. Again, anything with Mark Wahlberg. and yeah, and that was great, too. I see, what was the other one? Pete Berg did this one, too. It was Battleship. Yeah, it was a sci-fi movie, but it really was pro-Navy. I mean, I almost feel like they wanted it to be the Top Gun of the mid-2000s there, whenever that was filmed. But it's such a cheesy movie. But I mean, you think about it, like in that film, there's a lot of like AC/DC and like battleships making maneuvers to AC/DC songs. And it's like that's the type of stuff that Top Gun kind of did. It's like, here's Kenny Loggins and, you know, as singing as planes are taking off. But it just doesn't have that same magic or it doesn't really latch on to people the same way. And again, of course, I mean, Battleship is a cheesy movie. Don't get me wrong. But even in the Transformers movies, like Michael Bay always tried to respect the military and show them in a positive light. Like they were the Transformers, like allies against the Decepticons in a lot of them, like with what was his name? Josh Duhamel, I think it was, like in his team. Like they tried to show them in a positive light. But again, a lot of this came out post Afghanistan, Iraq invasion. I think these guys were trying to honor them in a, you know, show the military in a positive light because we actually had guys fighting at the time. I think we're far removed from that now, that it's just not like fresh in people's minds. And I just don't see that action. I mean, there's always going to be action movies. Like you said, like there's always going to be low budget kick butt movies, whether or not they're military focused and whether or not they're big budget. That's another, you know, another thing altogether. I'd be curious as to what could be the next sort of Top Gun type thing. You know, obviously that's the Navy, that's planes. But again, like you said, you have Tom Cruise, who's a known quantity. He's really good at action. Even though he's kind of aging, he does a lot of stunts. That was one of the novelties, I think, of this movie is they really got in planes and they filmed it. What you saw is what was happening for the most part, you know, obviously flying the planes themselves and all the good stuff.
They would use digital effects to remove the guy who was actually flying the plane.
But there's some visceral about actually being in the plane. And these guys actually, all these pilots, you know, actors, you pretend to be pilots. They were feeling these G's at times, you know, like they were experiencing it. So it shows on film. And I don't think enough, like I could see somebody trying to do that, but then digitally recreating it and just not having the same effect. I don't think this is going to be the next, I could be wrong. I could totally be wrong. I just don't see Hollywood chasing this. I think they just think maybe it's a one-off. I'd like to see more. I enjoy these type of films.
It doesn't need to be comic book movies where there's four every year just from one company and a half dozen from everyone else, what we're doing with comic book films.
Yeah, and I love those, but it was refreshing to see something different. In like typically at this point now, I'll probably go see Jurassic Park because that's, you know, someone the family likes and it's big budget, stupid action and all that on the big screen. I like to see those there. But typically it is the comic book movies that get me to the theater. It's got to be something really unique. And then Top Gun was one of those few like one-offs where I'm like, not only am I going to go see it, but I'm taking the whole family to go see it. And everybody enjoyed it.
Will there be another Top Gun?
I think the story's pretty well wrapped up. But that when you did ask about could Hollywood chase it? They could find a story for a third one. I don't know if they should. I think this is a great send-off. I mean, it's a sequel, but a great one-off type film. But man, never say never. I didn't think the Mission Impossible movies would be this deep into them, and yet here we are.
Oh, the Mission Impossible stuff is insane.
They just keep getting better.
They keep getting better, and you had the first two were released within a pretty reasonable time within each other. Then they had a long layoff before the third one, and then they just keep getting closer and closer together, and it wasn't until, like, the fourth movie that they said, hey, let's continue the string. Aside from Tom Cruise and Ving Rhames, there wasn't really anything tying the first three together. In each movie, they had a different guy bossing Tom Cruise around.
Right.
And it's weird because there felt like there was some desperation when they got to the third, especially the fourth movie where Tom Cruise was having that's when Tom Cruise was starting to have a tough time getting people into theaters to see his movie. Because you're getting close to, it was around that time when the Katie Holmes stuff, the jumping on the couch stuff, the Scientology started creeping in. He became, as a personality, less likable.
And I think it was around the time War of the Worlds came out, and I'm sorry, but that just was not a good movie. I mean, it's disappointing on a lot of levels because here's this big budget Steven Spielberg sci-fi special effects film with a known star, and it just was not good, at least in my opinion.
One of those weird Steven Spielberg well-made bad movies.
Yeah. It looked great. It just was not a good movie. And honestly, I even liked Tom Cruise's character in it, but I still just didn't like the movie. I don't know why.
Something went wrong in the planning phases.
Yeah.
That's usually where Steven Spielberg movies go wrong. They always look good. They always have good act. You know, Steven Spielberg, he knows how to get a good performance out of someone. But just sometimes there's something that happens in the planning phases. It's like, oh, they should have went left instead of right. And now we have a movie that doesn't connect.
Right. Yeah.
You bring up something pretty interesting, and I was just having a conversation about this with a friend of mine. There's two professions where Hollywood doesn't want to make them out-and-out good guys. The military. So, you know, even if you have a hero in the military, often they're fighting against corruption inside the military.
Yeah.
Or you have a war is hell thing. And police.
Yeah.
The conversation was about the show Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Where that was a show. Did you ever watch that?
Not religiously, but I'm very familiar with it, and I've seen it here and there.
Funny show. In the early seasons, you had the main character, Peralta, who loved being a cop and always wanted to be a cop. And then as the show went on and the country's complicated relationship with the police, and all of a sudden you saw him spending a lot of time dealing with corruption inside the police force and realizing, oh, there's bad cops and everything, which was tough because it was a comedy and a pretty light comedy. But you could see it was sort of like the producers or whoever felt like everything sort of changed under their feet and they were trying to sort of make it work in the current climate. and it didn't work very well. The only other show I can think of that's relatively new that seems to be pretty pro-police and is able to sort of dance around that is the Nathan Fillion show, The Rookie.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I used to watch that the first season. It was pretty good.
It's pretty good, and it makes being a police officer seem like a good and honorable thing. They have dealt with their corrupt cops and also just lazy, like people who shouldn't be in the field. But in general, it means it seems to want to say it's like, hey, being a cop isn't terrible. It's sort of like I could see that show not to the same degree because it's not a sexy show and it's not a buzzy show. It's sort of going back, tying in. It's sort of a dad show. It could be a show where I could see somebody's like, oh, I watched that with my dad and I wanted to be the sort of cop that Nathan Fillion was.
Nathan Fillion is definitely a charismatic guy and people like him. So seeing him as a cop, especially being somebody who was, he's playing a true to life character of somebody who joined the police force after like a divorce when he was an older man. So you can see why that'd be like interesting to people. But I was going to, you know, kind of pivot, and there's the show Blue Bloods. Have you ever seen that with Tom Selleck?
Tom Selleck and Donnie Wahlberg.
Yeah, Donnie Wahlberg. And I used to watch that fairly regularly. I haven't watched it in years. I think it's still on. But if you want to say, if you're calling like the Nathan Fillion, The Rookie, a dad show, then this is like a grandpa show. I mean, it is. It definitely skews older, but it is super pro cop. However, I mean, they also it's a drama. It's way a drama. It's not, there's hardly any lightheartedness in it aside from the, you know, some of the funniness between the family and all that.
A little bit of joshing between the family is about it, all you'll get.
Right. Right. But it's definitely a drama, but it's like, it's super pro cop. It almost always takes the side. Like everybody in the family is always like the best. It's what we wish every cop was. Tom Selleck's police commissioner says everything you wish he would say. You know, he's got a corrupt politician coming at him. He's got the mayor who's weaselly because he's really just worried about votes and not really what's, the mayor knows what's the right thing, but he wants to do a different thing because of the vote, all that stuff. And Tom Selleck always has the right counter and the right answer. And it's like, you wish this is how it worked in real life. But they dealt with in police corruption and all that. So it, like, they don't shy away from it, but they still totally shine the light of what it's like to be a police officer or even just in law enforcement at every level. The grandfather was a former police commissioner. Tom Selleck is the current police commissioner. Now, one of the sons is a detective. The other son died in the line of duty. The other son is a rookie. The daughter is a DA. It's like they all are involved with law enforcement at some level. And that way you get a different perspective. But of course, the perspective is always the righteousness of this family, basically. But I've always said that I think what really would heal, I guess, rehabilitate police officers' images is if Hollywood would make a new series of Police Academy movies. That's just what we need. We need like, aren't cops fun again? Here's Mahoney. And they can even do it like a Top Gun where they have Mahoney come back and he's the new commandant and he has to train a whole bunch of, you know, he calls in Tackleberry to be his master at arms and all that good stuff. You could pull in all the old guys to train the new generation and it practically writes itself. So yeah, maybe Hollywood will see Tom Cruise's path and do a Police Academy movie.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Sort of ties into what you were saying about how Stripes got people into the military. People don't need to be the hero. We're not, because when you're the schlubby guy who's the Tackleberry, Steve Guttenberg was never an imposing presence, but have the movie where it's like, eh, you know, you join the police academy, you join the cops, you get to have fun, you laugh, you hopefully you help some people. Again, never hurts to imply that people get laid in a job. and go for the comedy. Of course, they don't make feature film go to the big screen comedies anymore.
Yeah, that's true. Like you said, Coming to America went straight to Amazon. That, back in the day, that would have been easily in the theater.
It shows that although Tom Cruise is not the guaranteed box office he once was, but he still's got something, because Tom Cruise has yet to make anything other than a movie that went to theaters. And everyone else, either they're movie, you know, The Rock, for God's sakes, one of his last movies went straight to Netflix. Julia Roberts ended up doing like a 6-episode TV show that went right to Amazon, and she's working on a movie with George Clooney that's going to go straight to streaming. George Clooney and Julia Roberts, if you said in the early 90s they're going to make a movie together and it's going to go to like basically be a TV movie, that would be unfathomable.
Yeah, the times have definitely changed for sure. And the way people consume their entertainment has definitely changed. And it does seem that more, you know, if you are going to go to the theater, it has to be this kind of, it's like a big spectacle and not so much a smaller, more intimate type of film.
You sort of called out that an influence for you was Heartbreak Ridge. And that's a movie you and I have talked about pretty in depth, because I watched the heck out of that movie when it came out. I was just at the right age where it was playing all the time on whatever cable channel we had. And I really liked that movie. And going back when I was on your show, I went back and I rewatched it. It's like, there's some stuff that feels a little TV movie about it, but the stuff that works really still works. And Clint Eastwood is a legit movie star. It still is to this day. And, you know, his movies, I've always felt over the last 10 years, are a little hit or miss. And I think most people agree, you know, it all really just depends on, same thing when we were saying about Steven Spielberg, although they're very different directors. It all depends on how good the concept is, whether his movies work or not.
Right.
What's another movie that you can think of, maybe one that we haven't spoken about, you felt was inspiring, or you were just rewatched as like, that's what I want to see when I go to a military film?
Well, I don't know if it's what I want to see when I go to a military film, but one I rewatched recently was Full Metal Jacket, and I know we briefly touched on it, but surprisingly, and I actually shouldn't be surprisingly, that is one that came up as much as Top Gun in my poll of, hey, what influenced you to join the service? Now, granted, being that I was in the Marines, some of the veterans groups I'm in are predominantly Marine centric. So of course you're going to get a Marine movie. And that was one that came up a lot. So a lot of Marines actually were influenced by Full Metal Jacket. And when I've rewatched that, I'm hit or miss on how much I like that movie, but it's definitely well made. There's a lot to talk about there. The boot camp scenes are phenomenal. And I think that more than anything, not so much the Vietnam stuff. I think everybody always, like, if they quote that as being their influence, and I will say it had a slight influence on me as well. I watched the boot camp scenes with my dad. My dad was in the Army, but he was in the Vietnam era, and he went to Vietnam. And I remember watching this, and he would laugh at certain things, at parts you really wouldn't normally laugh at, like, you know, the guy's getting hit, and he's like, this is how it was back then. It almost scared me off from the Marines. I almost was like, yeah, maybe I'll just go Army. Thankfully, I manned up, and I watched Heartbreak Ridge a bunch of times. I said, well, I definitely got to be like Clint Eastwood and Stitch Jones. I find it funny and almost ironic about Full Metal Jacket being almost like a recruitment tool for the Marines, even though it was definitely not made to be at all. You know, obviously Top Gun had help from the Navy. The Navy participated in the making of these movies. Full Metal Jacket was made in England by, you know, with nothing to do with the American military. It's an anti-war film. I mean, it is based on a book, but it is not pro-war. It basically talks about the horrors of war. It's everything's horrible in Vietnam. It's all about Joker's loss of innocence and stuff like that, and being corrupted. You know, he tries to stay kind of like normal throughout the whole thing, and he can't. You know, obviously the boot camp stuff, like the gunny is sadistic, you know, it literally drives people insane. And yet this caused people to want to join the military just because of the way it portrays. I mean, just there is something authentic to a lot of the boot camp stuff, especially given that Arlie Ermey was a drill instructor in the Marines in that era. So it made sense. And people just gravitate towards, I guess, the realism and the toughness that comes along with it. And I'd actually heard that Matthew Modine, he's a bit of a pacifist. I'd actually read his book, Full Metal Diary. And he specifically said that, like, he didn't want to do certain other movies because of he didn't want to be seen as like jingoistic and pro-war. And I thought he was up for the role of Maverick and that he turned it down because of that. And then he does Joker, which is a more nuanced character in his mind. And it's clearly an anti-war film. And yet it probably influenced as many Marines to join. Obviously, maybe not at the same level as Top Gun, as we talked about, because that was just, everybody wanted to join the Navy after that. Like that was totally different. But
that was a pop culture phenomenon.
So I read the book Jarhead, and I haven't seen the film actually. But in the book Jarhead, the guy who was talking, he served during Desert Storm, but he was talking about how like the guys would sit around and they watch Full Metal Jacket and like they quote it, and how pretty much everybody in at that time was familiar and had watched Full Metal Jacket and kind of wanted that to be real life. So it's kind of funny that turned out to be that way. But honestly, I don't know if that's the type of film I would want made all the time, but I feel like that is the most common type of film that they make, the kind of like War's Hell boy. That's how I kind of call it, like War's Hell. There's like the rah-rah films and then the War's Hell's films. I like my movies like, I'll tell you one that I actually think is kind of like the perfect ideal is it's the Mel Gibson directed one with the kid who played Spider-Man, Hacksaw Ridge. It shows the heroism of, the main character. It shows just like everything what's right about the military. It also shows everything what's wrong with the military, because a lot of the brass didn't want that kid serving because he was a pacifist. He refused to take a gun. Talking about the corruption that we always talk about. It's not so much corruption, but the bureaucracy of that's in the military, which it's ridiculous. But it also does not shy away from the horrors of war at all. I mean, there is body parts flying everywhere, but out of that you see the bravery of like this guy and others, and it's just amazing. Like me, I want to see more true to life stories. I want to, like, this was based on a true story. Give me Band of Brothers any day. Make these don't shy away from the bad stuff, but show the good stuff. Show the camaraderie, show the bravery, show the heartbreak when somebody dies. You don't have to shy away from it. I love a good patriotic Rambo goes in there and kills everybody movie with an American flag strapped on his back. I'm all for those type of movies as well. But to me, show more real life, true life stories of people who really, like a lone survivor, stuff like that. There are so many amazing stories that have never even been talked about or scratched the surface of, better than anything somebody can make up. I think that's what my template would be. More power to anybody who wants to make a movie kind of showing you the horrors of war. Like I was thinking about this, like Pete Berg made all these like pro military, Michael Bay was making, showing the military in a good light. But at the same time, because there were a lot of people that were against, let's say the war in Afghanistan or the Iraq war, and that's fine. That's, nobody has to agree on everything, but there was a lot of movies like Stop Loss, where it's like, oh, these guys joined the service and they tried to get out and then they were told they can't get out. And it's like, oh, the horrors, don't join the service. It was just basically the premise of the story. And I used to see a lot of articles in the news about that. Oh, they're not letting these guys out. And I'm like, yeah, but we all know that when we sign up. You don't sign up for 4 years. You sign up for eight. You sign for four. And if they still need you, you don't leave. Or if they can call you back in. Like, I've had friends get called back in when Desert Storm, or not Desert Storm, Desert Storm 2, the sequel, just speaking of Top Gun, the sequel, they got called back in because their time in service wasn't technically up yet.
It's funny you bring up Hacksaw Ridge, a very good movie and a successful movie. Boy, that would have been even bigger. It had a couple of things going against it. Andrew Garfield, who's a very good actor, but that was not too long after the second Amazing Spider-Man happened, and he was a little bit of a damaged brand. He was in kind of career rehab mode. And it was the first film directed by Mel Gibson after his controversy.
Yeah.
So he's also in career rehab mode. So I remember it was a really good movie, good enough that it sort of overcame the fact that you didn't have a bankable star and you had a director who had a lot of problems.
Yeah, just Google it. You're going to learn all about it. I still go back to my daughter became a huge fan of Mel Gibson because of The Patriot and other movies, and you know, the Lethal Weapon movies, Maverick, not the other Maverick, the Cowboy Maverick, and not the Top Gun Maverick. But not really, she's not familiar with his personal antics. But I always joke whenever I see a movie, I'm like, say what you will about that crazy son of a bitch, he knows story structure, which is a line for South Park, but it's true to form. He may have had his problems, but he very competent in what he does. That movie, like you said, if it was a different star, or maybe if again Spider-Man hadn't like kind of tanked, and if Mel Gibson wasn't known for his antics, it easily could have been like the next Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah, Saving Private Ryan. You don't think of this as a military film, but Forrest Gump.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's definitely influenced by, because even when he's not in the military, it's still that kind of 60s counterculture for a lot of it. And of course, he does serve.
Listen, I completely understand anybody who sees Mel Gibson's name associated and said, you know what, I'm just going to back away from this. I get it. I do. You have a limited amount of entertainment dollars. And I understand feeling uncomfortable putting money into Mel Gibson's pocket. But also, entertainment, be it music, TV, movies, whatever, is just rife with people that you don't want to give money to because it turns out they're jerks. And entertainment's also weird because I have no idea if my dentist is a bad person. He might cheat on his taxes. He might cheat on his wife. He might say really unflattering things about specific groups of people. You don't know because it's your dentist. Who cares? Entertainment's weird because we find out too much.
There's too much access to celebrities now, which case in point that like when Tom Cruise was making all the talk show circuits and really promoting the fact that he was with Katie Holmes and all that. That's when we were like, wait a minute, he's kind of weird, but he hasn't done that in a while. He's kind of toned all that down, you know, and then we're like, hey, you know, actually, he's a pretty solid actor. You know, we forgot we like him.
That happened. And that was really the end of him playing romantic leading men. I think whenever you would see him as in a romantic role, it's like, oh, yeah, he's making eyes at that woman. That's the same guy who jumped on the couch. It reminds you too much.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I probably wouldn't want my worst moments as a romantic partner to someone being what people would think of whenever I'm like holding hands with my wife. Because it's like, oh, that's the guy who just called way too many times and did not know that she was not into him and was kind of pathetic. I don't want everyone thinking about like 16-year-old. Now, Tom Cruise was old enough to know better, but still.
You're right.
We all have bad moments where we made terrible decisions. He just happened to do his on Oprah. So, Brian, this has been amazing. I'm so glad we did this. Fantastic talking with you. Plug your pluggables.
All right, I can do that. Well, first off, let me just say thank you for having me on. I was happy to talk about Top Gun, but also military movies in general, because that's my forte. It's what I like. Speaking of, I talked quite a bit about a military movie, and it was the Marine Corps Movie Minute podcast. I did Minute by Minute, the movie, the Clint Eastwood classic, Heartbreak Ridge. That is completely in the bag. I got a few couple bonus episodes here and there. A couple actually with the actor Swede. He joined us for a few episodes, and then he did a long form interview with us we put out there. So at some point, we're going to come back. We've been teasing Full Metal Jacket, speaking of. So at some point, I hope to get that out there. But in between now and then, if you want to find me, so the Marine Corps Movie Minute can be found at, you know, MCMM_pod at Instagram and Twitter, all those good places. But I also currently have two current shows. I have another sort of Movies by Minutes. I'm doing the song Hamilton, not the song, but the Hamilton musical, thank you. Hamilton musical, One Song at a Time, the Disney Plus version. And that's over there. I'm doing that with my daughter. She's my co-host. And it's Hamilton Shot by Shot. And that's Hamilton Shot by Shot on Facebook and Instagram if you want to check it out. And we're going one song at a time. And then my other project is a little more, it's more like once a month because it's a long form kind of lot to talk about. But I'm doing this with Travis Bowe. We're doing the Marvel Events Timeline podcast, which is we are starting with Marvel back in the timely comics era back in the 30s. And we're slowly making our way to the future. But we're, instead of hitting every like major like everything, we're just going to hit the major events, coming of Galactus, your Infinity Gauntlets, that type of thing. So, but some of the things that we're actually doing is we're talking about the creators and some of their personal life behind that. So pretty early into it, we only just now hit World War II. So if it gives you a chance where we are, and that is Marvel Events Pod on Instagram, if you want to find us there. And Brad, again, thanks for having me on.
Very cool. Recommend everyone check that out. Right, it's been fantastic having you on. And I will say, and I've said this before, really want to be sure to say this to you again. Thank you so much for your service. You have served the country, this country, proudly. I am not a military guy, but as I said before, I'm like a generation removed from when all the men in my family were in the military, raised to have a great respect for that. And I also appreciate people who do the stuff that I would be bad at. Just way too klutzy and not athletic enough. So I think telling me to march while handing me a gun would just end up with me getting hurt real bad. A lot of respect for what you do. And thank you for your service.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
That wraps episode 265. Quick correction. The movie with George Clooney and Julia Roberts is called Ticket to Paradise, and it will be released to theaters and then go to the Peacock streaming network 45 days later. Oops. Big thanks to Brian Lockhart. He is a good guy and a great guest. Can't wait to have him back. Also, big thanks to Katie May. It was another great question, which we've sort of come to expect. Next time on the Cosmic Geppetto Podcast, co-creator of the excellent comic Mashbone and Grifty, Oscar Garza, returns to talk about his upcoming trip to San Diego Comic-Con. You need more? Brady Crane makes his long-awaited return to talk about the Jurassic Park franchise. Till then, in the words of Jarve Harden,
see you in the funny pages.
Subscribe to the Cosmic Geppetto Podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever quality podcasts can be found. Rate and review us while there. Follow us on Twitter at Cosmic Gpod, and we will follow you back. Unless you're a jerk, we don't follow jerks. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Cosmic Geppetto. We love hearing your ideas for upcoming episodes. Email us at cosmicgeppetto@comcast.net.
That was a sex scene with a plot. It was so choreographed.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.